Here we go, we're recording. Oh, we've got some more folks joining. Lush. Do say hello. If this is your first call, and I know for some folks this is your first self-belief school call, you're in such good hands because Mary has been here right from the start. She'll show you all the ropes. It's really lovely to see you all and to be with you. We are going to spend some time tonight going into the Belief Buster, which is one of the main tools that we use in self-belief school. So it's a great call to come to if you're not if you haven't gone through the program yet, if you've never looked at a video, if you've just joined and gone, shit, there's an email that says I've got to be on a call, then this is the perfect time to rock in here. So this is going to be a really gentle walkthrough. I really want to share with you some of the benefits of this process and how you can use this in your day-to-day life, and why this tool is a such a favorite, but also one that you might return to again and again. If you haven't already, get yourself this baby printed off. This is the playbook. It gets sent to you. Oh, my goodness, Andrea, you've got it already. That's brilliant. I'm shocked at the quality of the printing in this thing. It's really, really good. And it'll get shipped to your door in a couple of days. Bless her, Kay has found a really brilliant print-on-demand service. So it's really cool. And Susan, I'm so glad you're here too. Susan's been here from the start. Sharon, I think you joined quite quickly, and Mary too. So we're kind of half and half with newbies
Hi,
and
Sass. Hi,
OGs.
everyone.
Really cool. Really cool. Okay, so let's chat about the Belief Buster. Where does it come from, and why am I going to bang on about this one tool for the next hour? The thing that self-belief, sorry, that self-doubt is kind of built on, the thing that keeps it running are the beliefs that the protective beliefs that we hold dear. So the things that tell us that we've got to do this perfectly, that if we're not needed, we'll be abandoned, right? If we don't get our shit together like everybody else does, we'll inevitably fail. These kinds of beliefs that perpetuate our self-doubt, these are quite unhelpful. But these beliefs are not there randomly. And we all have slight variations on these beliefs. So even if some of those sound quite familiar to you, you'll have a specific read on that belief that's particular to you and your experience. So our protective beliefs keep our self-doubt alive. And the kind of fascinating and annoying thing about our big brains is that we don't believe what we see. We see what we believe, right? So we don't believe what we see. Someone turns around and says, "Oh my God, you did the best job on that. That was brilliant. You could not have done that any better. I'm thrilled." Right? We don't see that. We hear, "Oh, but there's a tone in there that suggests that we might have missed something." Or, "But I know what I did to create that thing, and I didn't do my best work. I half-assed it and I did it at the last minute." Right? So our brains will replay the beliefs that we hold dear, even if the evidence outside of us is contrary to that. It's why it doesn't matter how many times someone says, "Oh my goodness, you're so easy to love." If there's something in you that's like, "I don't think I'm that lovable," then it's almost like they kind of feed into your self-doubt. You may even find that you don't really trust people who offer you unconditional love and support and compassion. Because it's like, "Yeah, but if you really knew me, if you really knew what was going on under the surface here." Right? So if that sounds familiar to you, I'm getting a few nods, right? If that sounds familiar to you, It's because of these beliefs that we've got running under the surface of our daily lives, giving us that, oh, remember, that's why. This won't work because of that. Or you won't finish things because of this. Right? So when we use the belief buster, and I apologize a little bit for the cheesy name, but I do love alliteration. When we use the belief buster, what we're actually doing is slowing down our busy minds that go for the shortcut and just rethink the beliefs and the thoughts that have been running for a really long time. We're slowing it all down and taking a look at what's actually going on. Right? So what we're going to do tonight is go through this process together, and I'm going to give you some really some hints and some tips and some ways to move through this that will really support you, right? So if you are someone who has a lot of protective beliefs that are sort of flowing around all the time, then this process is a really great doorway into starting to change that, right? The thing to know is that your protective beliefs, the ones that you might feel a little bit embarrassed by, or maybe have a little bit of even some shame around, like those beliefs that are under the surface, even if they're completely illogical and your smart adult brain can see that they're not serving you, they will feel true, right? There'll be something in them that is there for a reason, that is there to try and protect you. So even if they seem a bit illogical and you're like, well, I know I'm quite good at this, I always get feedback that I'm quite good at this, but somehow you don't quite believe that, it's because there is some reason for that. It's there for a really good reason. And what we're doing is we slow down and look at how these beliefs sort of play out in our lives. What we're doing is exploring the very good reasons why things are there. Yeah. So I've created a couple of slides for you to try and help you. If you've got a paper and pen, that's going to really help. So this is what your self-doubt is going to say to you a squillion different ways. Don't do that, you might hurt yourself. Don't finish that thing because then someone might judge it. Right? Don't tell someone the truth about what you think because then they might reject you. Don't post that thing on Instagram because everyone said it already before. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Sound familiar? Yeah. So it's going to say this a hundred squillion different ways. It's going to say, don't do that, you might hurt yourself, to you in ways that may sound familiar to you, right? Because one of the places that our beliefs come from is the voices that we've heard growing up. So if you had a parent who wasn't very good at giving you lots of encouragement, and letting you be imperfect and failing and doing all the very human lovely things that we all do, if that wasn't your experience, then that voice might be actually quite critical, right? Those beliefs might sound really judgy to you. If you grew up in a home where your feelings were a bit too big, but too inconvenient or not really welcome, which for those of us who are in our 40s, 50s, 60s, that was pretty common, right? No one was really a fan of women having emotions back then, right? So you might find that it's not just don't do that, it's don't feel that. You might hurt yourself. Don't share what you're really feeling because you might hurt yourself. So all of these are just the ways that your self-doubt is trying to protect you from being hurt, usually again in the same way that you were when you first decided that this was a way to stay safe. So some things to remember as we go through this process. I highly, highly recommend, if you're a person with a busy mind, lots of self-doubty beliefs, make a bit of a habit of just checking in with yourself, with what you're believing or feeling or doing or not doing. You could make it a practice a couple of times a week. For those of you who love the morning pages process, Julia Cameron's process, you may want to incorporate some of this in here. Today I'm, you know, my big belief today is I'm feeling this, I'm doing or not doing this. It can be a nice way to sort of end the day, just reflect back on what happened for you. And when you do that checking in, what you're doing is sort of reminding yourself of what the beliefs are that have been in charge today. And so that will give you some options for taking you through the belief buster. You'll get really good at this, right? It's a muscle, and you'll get really good at this process. And usually, like, I've done hundreds of these. And nowadays, I find I can sort of go through it pretty thoroughly in less than 20 minutes. So if I find I've got something that I need to sort of work through, like some way that I want to kind of coach myself, then this is something I'll go, okay, cup of tea, light a candle, I'm going to go through this process and just see what the heck's going on in my brain. Right, what's going on in my body? When you make a habit of this, it doesn't make it into a big deal, right? It means that you're not like, okay, now I've got to go through this process, right? Because we want to make this something that you can kind of reflect on pretty quickly whenever you need to. Yeah, so you'll find in the playbook, we give you extra templates for the belief buster. I honestly will do these on post-it notes so I can just throw them away once I've figured out what's going on. Yeah. Do this whole thing imperfectly. Don't worry about getting it right. Don't worry about choosing the right belief to look at. Don't worry about naming the correct emotion, right? This whole process is very forgiving. It's all about getting to know you. Yeah, so let yourself do it in a kind of a half-assed way. That's fine. There is no requirement to do anything in this entire program perfectly, whatever the heck that means, right? Like, just honestly, just let yourself off that hook. It doesn't help at all. And the thing to really remember is that because what we're doing here is wanting to change the unhelpful beliefs and find more helpful beliefs, the way to really embody that new helpful belief is to take some action to practice it. So going through this process is going to be great for fleshing out what's going on, getting a sense of, you know, a deeper awareness of your own kind of way that your self-doubt is showing up. But it's when you experiment with trying new things out in the world, that's when you're going to really change it. And that's because you're giving your, even though your brain is trained, right, to see what it believes rather than believe what it sees, the more new evidence that your helpful belief is true, that's the thing that shifts that belief, that old belief, into the new, more helpful one. The more evidence we can give our brain to notice, oh, but the more helpful belief is just as true as the old unhelpful one. That's the thing that shifts it. Does that make sense, everybody? Yeah. So it's the action afterwards that really makes the difference. I read some research recently that suggests that changing beliefs, depending on how embedded they are, to really fully embody it, so it's a kind of automatic default belief, takes about a year. And I was like, oh, that's bloody great, isn't it? It's a really long time, actually. But when I think about the beliefs that I've shifted over the years, that sounds about right. You can probably do it a bit quicker than that, right? I think there is a sort of, you know, the first month or two as you're practicing a new belief, that's usually when it feels the crunchiest. And then it becomes a little easier to believe as you've got more evidence there. Yeah. Becomes a little more easier to go, oh no, that's what we're believing now. All right. So the other things to remember, right? Getting into the practice of just checking in with yourself, that's going to give you some really good fodder for the belief buster process. Do the whole thing imperfectly, and remember that it's the action you take afterwards that's really going to help you embody a new, more helpful belief. Yeah. Yes, Sarah, that's a great comment. Could you give examples of new beliefs? Yeah, I'll do that as we go through this process together. But I'll just give you a really live example for me at the moment. One of the beliefs I'm really practicing quite actively is it's safe for me to receive. It's safe for me to receive. Right? So notice it's not complicated. It's quite straightforward. And I already believe it. Right? I already believe it is safe for me to receive. But my default is it's better to give. That's my default. And then that ends up getting me in all kinds of trouble because I overcommit and I work too hard and I people please. And it's a shit show when that one is in charge, right? Let's face it. So when I come back to, oh, it's safe for me to receive, my nervous system feels like, oh yeah, that's so not much nicer to believe, right? And I'm really noticing all the little things I'm receiving each day. You know, little tiny things that I can make happen for myself that make it true that it's safe for me to receive. So Sarah, we'll come up with some as we go through this process, but that's just one that's really alive for me at the moment. So that gives you an example. Yeah. All righty. Let's go through this process, the belief buster. It's all it is 6 questions, and it's the point of this is to change your unhelpful beliefs that your self-doubt's running on. Yeah, that's why we're doing it. So what does it look like? Looks like this. These are the 6 questions. And we just go through them nice and slow. So I'm going to take you through these now. And what we're going to start with is just get some raw material for you to play with. just something that you can kind of start with so you've got a belief you can use in this process. So what I would encourage you to do is just have a think back over the last sort of few days. Where has there been a situation where you got a kind of outcome that you didn't feel great about? Right? Or you were feeling something that felt a bit crunchy, or you know you were believing something that wasn't very helpful. You just think back over the last couple of days. It doesn't have to be a big thing, doesn't have to be the worst thing that's ever happened to you, any of that. Just anything you notice. If you've got lots of examples, you can just pick one. Where has your self-doubt been present over the last few days? Where might you have been holding yourself back from saying something, doing something?
Nobody's coming forward.
Nothing's coming forward for you, Andrea.
Well, there is, but I don't know how to articulate it really.
Oh, okay, cool. That's a different problem.
It's just really basic. Like went to a sustainability event down in London. So I'm Birmingham based, but I went to a big event with lots of suppliers and people, and it was a big horrible whole networking thing, and I just sat in the corner, and it was just, yeah, it was ridiculous, and I knew exactly what I was doing, and I watched me do it, and I didn't engage until I saw someone I vaguely knew. Is that like
This is the perfect example to play with.
Great.
Notice your brain is going to give you examples, and then your self-doubt's going to go, well, that's not good enough.
Right? Yeah.
It's not
oh,
big
yeah,
enough.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
That's a perfect
So,
example.
As well as feeling awkward, I was beating myself up about it as well. So,
yeah. So that's it's a great thing to raise, because that is often what our self-doubt will do, is we don't just have the self-doubt and the experience.
Yeah.
We then tell ourselves some stories about why that worked or didn't work. And Sarah, please don't ever apologize. I love your questions. Does it have to hold you back recently, or can it be a core belief that always holds you back? If you want to use your core belief that holds you back, let's go there. Totally happy for you to use that. And I just want to also suggest that as you're practicing this process, you can use it for anything. Right, you can use it for any belief that feels big or small. Right, and the amount of energy and resistance that you might feel to changing that is just going to depend a little bit on how that, you know, how active and big that belief feels inside of you. So, Sarah, you're super welcome to use a big one. We might get some gentle movement on that over the course of tonight. So that'll be great. Has everyone got something they sort of want to work on? Yeah? Okay, fab. Great. Great, great, great. Okay, so here's some tips for when you're doing this. We go through this process twice. The first one is to look at the protective belief, and the second round we do it slightly differently, and that's to find a more helpful belief. Okay, so some top tips for this first round through the process. Always remember, the goal is about increasing your awareness of what's going on. Right, so we're slowing it down, looking at what's going on, because often it's quite quick, right? Often it happens quite quickly. We sit down to write a difficult email, and suddenly we're doing the laundry, right? And we're like, what the hell happened there? Why have I still not written that email, right? Or it feels uncomfortable, like Andrea mentioned, it feels uncomfortable that we do this thing that we're kind of aware of already, and so we want to move past it really quickly. Right, because it feels a little uncomfortable. So it's like, oh, let's just move on. Give me the answer, right? But the goal is to increase your awareness with the protective belief. So we want to slow down. That's why I recommend you always do this on paper, even if it's a post-it note. Back of an envelope is perfect. But by slowing down and writing it, you're actually tuning into yourself. Lots of amazing research on why handwriting really connects you back to yourself. There's some kind of neurobiological processes that go on there that I don't know all the details of, but I've experienced the benefits of doing this myself. So highly recommend that you always slow down and do this on paper. If you try and do it in your mind, you won't be able to hold all the information in your mind. You can start anywhere, right? So if you just notice the outcome, so Andrea, you could start from the outcome, which was, you know, didn't have a chat to anyone, sat back at the event, and then work your way backwards through the thing. So you can start at the outcome. You could start at you know, had an uncomfortable emotion. I think it was this, right? And then work your way around that. But you want to complete all of the six boxes. And the other thing to remember is there's no rush to change the belief, right? So try and always remember that the reason you have this protective belief in the first place is because on some level, it keeps you safe. It holds you back because it keeps you safe. Right? So my protective belief that, you know, you should always be giving rather than receiving, that protects me because I'm always taking care of other people. Protects me from the risk of rejection. I'm needed. All that jazz. So there's no rush to change this belief because it on some level it's working, and on some level it's kind of who you are, right? Like, we don't want to throw out the good stuff. I think, you know, underneath that tendency for me to overgive is a really healthy belief or value, rather, about generosity. You know, that feels like, oh, when I sit in that, I think, yeah, that feels really important to me. Generosity is a really beautiful thing for me. It's very easy for me to sit in that. So I don't want to throw that away, right? Which can sometimes happen when we get a bit caught up in changing the belief, right? So just remember, there's no rush to change it. You may also experience some resistance if it's a belief that you've had for a long time. Right, like Sarah was saying, around, you know, a belief that always kind of holds you back. On some level, you know, that is there, and it is a default way of keeping yourself safe on some level. And if you try and change that, you might experience a ton of resistance to it. So we're always in no rush. Yeah. Everyone's sort of okay with all of that? You're all good? Okay. So let's start off with the first box, which is, what is the context, right? So we always start off with the context. And we just want to state the factual, neutral reality of where that belief took place, right? So Andrea's brilliant example earlier was at conference, is the context, right? You don't need to tell yourself a whole story about it. We don't need to explain, justify, give ourselves, you know, the whole thing. It's more, you know, what's the neutral, factual reality? This is where people get stuck. Because if it involves someone else, we'll say things like, my brother was a total dick, right? And that is not neutral or factual. That's an opinion. We might do things like, you know, blame the world, right? So anything that's outside of us, other people, circumstances, blah, blah, blah. So just notice that if it's not neutral or factual. And for those of you who are exploring a belief that always holds you back, just think about the typical context where this shows up. Right? Is it in a particular relationship, or is it at work? Right? So is there a place or a person where this shows up? If you need any help with making it neutral or factual, please shout, because this can be sometimes quite tricky. Anyone struggling? Yeah, Mary.
So I want to say Samuel hasn't found a new job yet. Does that sound like a factual.
Yep.
Concluding statement.
There's a person called Samuel has not found a job. Can prove that in court. Yep. Easy peasy. Notice that it's nice and neutral, right? If you'd said, Samuel, the lazy bugger, has not found a new job, has still not found a job, or still is in capitals, right? There's emotion attached to it, still hasn't found a job, then that isn't as neutral or factual as it could be. And the reason we want it to be neutral and factual is because this isn't going to change. The context is the context. People are going to people. The world is going to be, you know, its beautiful, heartbreaking self. And so what we want to do in this process is recognize that no one and nothing needs to change for us to change how we feel about it, for us to change what we believe about it. Our beliefs are not dependent on anyone else, which is so freeing and a pain in the ass, because then you're like, oh, I'm responsible for all my feelings and thoughts. Yeah. Yep. So it might be a pain to realize before it becomes freeing, and that's okay. Yeah.
That's
but that's a great
question.
One, Mary. Well done. Yeah.
Sorry.
Brilliant. Sorry, Susan, go ahead.
Oh, sure. So my thing that I'm holding myself back on is the same thing that I have been working on through this whole program. But right now I have made some progress. I'm applying for an MFA program and I've done almost everything except finish my portfolio. I did submit a portfolio, but it needs to be a little different. And so I'm kind of dragging my feet about finishing it. So would the context be, I'm not finishing my portfolio?
Oh, so first of all, Susan, I'm so excited for you doing this, because I remember when we first met, you were playing with maybe doing this, and now you are here. So
yeah,
it's very
Thank
cool.
Thank you.
So what I would offer is just to make that a bit more neutral is applying for MFA.
Oh, okay.
Right? See how that's just a bit more neutral?
Yeah, sure.
No, there's no judgment in there. There's nothing, you know, it's just that you're applying for your MFA. Heck, something could come along and you might go, oh, I'm going to spend the year traveling, in which case you delay it a year. So what? Right?
True.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. These are great. Anyone else got a context they want to play with? Are we good? All right. So what is the protective belief? So just in one sentence, you're going to describe how you are choosing to interpret the context. Right? So you've got a neutral, factual context. You're applying for an MFA. Sam hasn't found work yet. What's the belief that's coming up around that? Let yourself just be totally honest. This does not have to be tidy or pretty. It is very understandable, natural to have a little bit of discomfort or even shame around your protective beliefs. You might find that you are being quite judgy with yourself or someone else. You might find it sounds really illogical and you're like, if I was more evolved, or I should be more evolved and I shouldn't be thinking this. But just put down in one sentence, what is the protective belief? Yeah, Mary, beautiful. I failed Samuel as a mother. Yeah, I feel that. Yeah. Notice as well just the relief you give your nervous system to just admit to yourself, oh, this is how I'm interpreting this, right? To tell yourself the truth. Yeah. Sarah, this is a fantastic question. Are the beliefs always protective? I understand that sometimes they developed as a child as an explanation. That's absolutely one of the very valid reasons where your beliefs come from. That's one of the very understandable causes, right? We interpret something as a child, and then what happens is we decide, oh, this is who I need to be to keep safe, either to preserve our relationship and our family, or to fit in, to belong, right? So the thing to notice is that even if the belief is a bit painful to admit, on some level it's holding you back from something. And the reason it's doing that is because it's trying to protect you from some kind of risk. So if something is really long standing for you, if it developed as a child, when you were a child, just notice, oh, I'm using my child self that's actually interpreting this current context. Yeah. I'm so glad that helps, Sarah. Thank you. Great question. Yeah, Sharon, I'm not doing enough. Yeah. These are great. Bravo, folks. Yep, it's a great context to look at, Sharon. So, and you could, I wonder if you've got a nice, clear, neutral, factual context. Right? If you're a long-standing member and a role model for people in the membership is leaving the membership, and the belief is I'm not doing enough for my people. So I would offer like a context here is someone's choosing to leave my membership. Yeah, Esther, this is a great one. I was asked to speak and the belief is I'm not interesting enough. Cracker. Nailed it. Nailed it. Okay, cool. So, when you believe this, what's the top emotion that comes up for you? When you believe, I'm not interesting enough, I'm not doing enough, I failed as a mother, like, what's the top emotion that comes up for you? Sometimes you need to kind of go inside and have a little think about it, have a little feel through it. Don't worry too much about getting it exactly right. One of the things you'll find in the playbook on page, I'm not going to be able to find it now. On one of the pages to do with the Belief Buster, I think it's in there, I'll find it, is the feelings wheel. Right? If you've never seen that before, you can just Google it if you can't find it in the playbook like me. And it's was developed by a psychologist, and it just documents all the different, or names all the feelings. I mean, they're all categorized. It's like, oh, cool. Oh, thank you, Andrea. It's page 30. Love it. So that can be really helpful just to, as you're developing a bit more of an emotional vocabulary, if like me, you're sort of, you tend to have a bit of a, you know, feelings are a bit, can be a bit tricky to articulate. It's a great resource for you on page 30, as found by Andrea. Everyone got an emotion that comes up for them? Feel free to share those in the chat if that helps you. So now we've got the context, the belief, and the emotion, right? And just notice, these are all the things that are going on inside of us. No one else can see that this is happening. No one really knows that this is how we're interpreting the context. right? This is the internal stuff. Then we move on to the bottom row of the belief buster, and we're talking about the more external stuff. So when you feel how you're feeling, what do you do or say or not do or not say? Right, so we're looking at your behavior. What are you doing or not doing because of how you feel? What you I will often find is this is the box that gets the most information put in it. And it can be quite helpful to just, you know, fill that up, list down all the things. Everyone got a few things in there? Yeah. Cool. And so now we're thinking about, like, so what does this all lead to, right? If you're doing or not doing these things, what's the outcome? And usually this will be pretty simple, like I'm not having the conversation, or I'm not saying yes to something. I'm holding myself back in some way, usually. So it's a tangible outcome. Everyone got a sense of what this is creating for them? Anyone stuck or want some help? All good. Okay. So the last question is, what's the risk? What risk is this belief protecting you from? Some common risks are things like judgment, failure, rejection, disappointment. So notice, what is this protecting you from? I want to give you a little window into the why. Why might you be doing this? Anyone want to share what you think the risk might be?
I can share.
Yeah, go for it, Susan.
Okay, I wrote failure and disappointment and sadness. Those are the usual ones, but then something interesting came up, and that is it'll be over and I won't have any more anticipation.
Right. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense, right?
Yeah, because it's so easy to get excited about something that hasn't happened and to fantasize,
Yeah.
and then when it's done, it's like, okay, it's done.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm wondering even if that's quite a sophisticated form of protecting yourself from disappointment, Susan, like that, almost like the anticlimax of it.
Yeah, it's definitely a pattern.
Yeah.
In my
Interesting.
life. Yeah.
And so the sort of supplementary question there is, how are you already experiencing the risk? Right? So sometimes what we can do is internalize that thing that we're trying to protect ourselves from. Right? So if the risk for you is about sort of protecting yourself from any disappointment or anticlimax, how are you already experiencing that?
Oh, I'm absolutely experiencing it by not doing the thing, because every time I don't do it, I'm letting myself down. Hence the sadness and the disappointment.
Totally. Yeah.
It's kind of circular.
Yeah. And it's a good thing to know, right? The reason we ask this question is because we think we're protecting ourselves from a risk that we're often already managing.
Yeah.
Right? So this idea, oh, I won't be able to be with the anticlimax, I won't be able to be with that disappointment. But actually, you know that you can because you're already doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, you're super welcome.
Interesting.
Yeah. This can be a little bit of a brain freeze for some folks, right? If you're experiencing, you're like, what? No, that's not happening to me. Then let's chat. Yeah, Sharon, tell me about what's happening for you.
Yeah, I just realized, sorry, can you hear me okay? Yeah.
We can, yes, yeah. Beautifully.
I just realized, because I go into, when people leave my membership, I go into this ridiculous kind of, oh, what am I doing this for? I'm just like going to give it all up. I'm just going to get rid of it because it's not making enough money, blah, 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 blah. But I've realized through just now that me pulling the plug, me saying I'm going to like fold it all, saves me from the, it's like pull the plug before everyone leaves. So then I don't have to face people leaving. I can just,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's kind of protect.
You totally get that.
Do it before they do it, you know.
And look how
they have to face it,
right? Like, and this is the thing, folks. Your self-doubt is so sophisticated, right? Like, it's gonna offer you all kinds of ways to keep you safe. So, Sharon, this is a perfect example of that, right? I've got one person in a membership who's decided to leave, and my self-doubt saying, pull the plug, quit the whole thing, then no one can ever leave.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And just notice, right, that idea that how are you already kind of living with the risk, experiencing the risk? If the risk is something around rejection, maybe?
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Then people not like, liking me, rejection.
Oh,
yeah.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So your self-doubt's going, I know the best way to deal with this is you reject everyone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you reject your work. And you reject all of the ways that this provides a beautiful, helpful service to all your clients.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Great insight. All right, just slowing it down, having a look at what's happening. Yeah, love it. Love it, love it. Yeah, Sarah, I love that that has felt quite powerful for you. Yeah, because how I certainly am right now experiencing the risk and the belief as a child's way of seeing the world. Yeah, that sounds really coherent with what you've shared about your unhelpful belief, your protective belief. So yeah, beautiful. And remember, all we're trying to do is understand some more awareness, right? We're just trying to figure out what the heck is going on here, right? And your self-doubt is going to give you this very sophisticated way of helping to manage the risk. If it is a long-standing belief, it's likely that this last question is a bit like, oh, this is my four-year-old self, right? This is my 14-year-old self. Or this is me when I was 26 and this awful thing happened and I decided in that moment that I must do this from now on. And it's like, oh, now I'm 50. I can probably choose something different. Yeah, yesterday that was 14-year-old me. Yeah. Yeah, our 14-year-old selves probably would have got on great. Yeah. Yeah. So just notice, all we're doing in this first round is getting some awareness, right? Seeing what's going on. We're just trying to see the pattern. The more you do this, the more you're going to uncover really common risks, right? You might find, like I did this every day for about 8 months because I was trying to figure out the best way to do this process. I trained as a cognitive behavioral therapist and I was a bit like, yeah, I don't quite like it. It feels a bit formulaic, but it was this last question that I was like, oh, I think we need to figure that bit out. And I found that most of my unhelpful beliefs were around protecting me from disappointment. That was a really big one for me. So this is why I really suggest you use this as a process to just sort of keep checking in with yourself, see where it's coming up. Right? Don't make a big deal out of it. It's like, oh yeah, cool, that's that protective belief again. I'm getting really familiar with how that one shows up. Yeah. Cool. So you are now at a decision point where you can say, am I ready to let this go? Or do I want to explore more helpful ways of looking at this context? Do I want to see what else might be true? Right? And that's where we start to look at a more helpful belief. This doesn't usually take as long. You've done the hard work, right? So what we're doing with the more helpful belief is we're changing the order of the way we go through this. Okay, so let me, oops, what's happening there? Some top tips to play with here. Just remember, the outcome is not positive thinking, right? We're not trying to polish a turd, which is a great Kiwi saying here, right? We're not throwing glitter on something that's really painful, right? We're in no way trying to bypass very valid and sometimes quite difficult experiences. That's never the goal, right? So notice, because you will feel it. You'll be like, oh, I think I'm trying to gaslight myself into thinking this is amazing, and it's really not, okay? So what we want to do is get to a more helpful belief, more helpful thinking. And for me, this is the voice of your healthy adult self, right? So if, like me and Esther, it's your 14-year-old who's running the show a lot of the time, it's like, oh, but hang on, there is a healthier, more adult self who can offer me something here. Yeah. And that part of you is never going to try and bypass what's real for you. The thing to always come back to is, do you believe the more helpful belief? If you don't, you're going to resist it. It's going to exacerbate any feelings of self-doubt because you just don't believe it. Right, this is also why affirmations where you're, I love my body, when you actually don't, often exacerbate the feelings of, I really don't love my body, and now I'm just trying to kid myself, right? So we have to believe the more helpful belief. That's the only real rule here. And the other thing to remember is nothing really changes in the process. You probably will have some realizations. You might get deeper awareness. That's the goal. But it's practicing the more helpful belief, actually taking some actions to support it. That's what's going to really change things. Yeah. Okay, so what's the context? Exactly the same as before. Because remember, nothing outside of you needs to change for you to feel okay, for you to find a more helpful belief. This person's still leaving Sharon's membership. Esther's still being asked to talk at this thing. Mary's son still hasn't found a work. Andrea's at the conference, right? Like these things are still true. So we just stay with that context. Excuse me. So, Sarah, I love that you've raised this. Believing the more helpful belief is the challenge for you. Rationally, I know it, but I don't believe it. So let me check in with you at the end because I want to make sure that this feels a bit different for you because I completely understand. And a lot of the times this process will encourage us to believe something that's something that doesn't really quite land, that we have resistance to. So we will absolutely make sure that this feels different for you, okay? So the context is always the same. And then we go to another place, right? We start with your desired emotion. How do you want to feel about this context? Now, just notice if you've gone from despair to deep joy, right? If your desired emotion is deep joy, that's probably going to be too far up the ladder, right? So you want to just think about what's something that's next to do, you know, next to feel, something that you can actually access, something that's just a little bit better. One of the most highly underrated emotions is neutrality. Sometimes it's like, yep, I just want to feel a bit okay about this. Just want to feel neutral. So just notice the gap between the emotion that came up and the unhelpful belief and your desired emotion. There's usually not too much of a gap there, yeah? Everyone got something that they're feeling like, oh, okay, I can probably access that, yeah? If you're struggling, yell. How you doing up there, Mary? You want to chat?
So I think that idea of neutrality is beautiful because this is such a loaded one for me that, feeling all, you know, butterflies and rainbows is not accessible at this second.
Perfect.
I really like that idea of neutrality. Like, okay, yeah. Sam's doing the best he can.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. Sam is looking for a job.
And the thing to notice here, right, is that this is actually Sam's context.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't anything you can feel that will change Sam's context. Mm-hmm. So you may as well choose something that supports you. Right?
I like that. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So neutral is great, you know?
Neutral is great. Neutral is a huge step forward.
Right? Yeah. And just notice how neutral kind of feels in your body. Does it feel like just a bit lighter?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I worked with someone, a client, for about a year, and we used to do this process most weeks. And neutral became her absolute favorite go-to emotion. Because she was kind of, you know, she felt things really deeply. She was very sensitive. And she found that other people's situations particularly just derailed her. So we found neutral was hugely freeing for her. So, you know, for folks watching the replay, or if you're here and you're thinking, oh, yeah, that's kind of a thing, I don't even quite know what neutral might feel like, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it, neutral is peaceful, generally, mm-hmm. You know?
And I think it's really aligned with my core values, in a sense of, like, that's really his business. That really is not my business.
That's right. Yeah.
Really is Samuel's business. And it's not for me to take on and feel I have some responsibility about that. So I like neutral. Thank you for neutral.
Beautiful. Love it.
I don't know if I've visited very much in my lifetime, but I'm going to become a frequent flyer of neutral, I think.
Love it. Neutral Airlines. Love it. Love it so much. That's great. Bravo, Mary. So good. Okay. If you had your desired emotion, if you're feeling that, what would it be possible to do or say? What's the possible behavior that's available to you? If you're, so if Mary's feeling neutral, what does that lead to? What might you do or say if you're feeling neutral? Whatever your desired emotion is. And you'll know that the emotion kind of isn't quite right, or it might be too far away if you find it really hard to imagine. Right? If you find it really hard to imagine what your possible behavior could be. It's like, oh, maybe that emotion's a bit too far away. And again, you'll probably find that this is the one where you can come up with lots of things, lots of actions to take. Anyone need some help or want some help? All okay. All right. Question four is, well, what's the likely outcome? So if you're feeling this desired emotion and engaging in this possible behavior, what's the likely outcome? What might be different? Notice how that likely outcome feels to you, how it feels in your body. If your response is anywhere in the valley of peace, then we're good. Anyone want to share what's come up for them around the outcomes changed?
Two things for me. So one was that I could say no, but I'm saying no because I've been much more objective about the invitation, and I've thought through whether or not I'm actually like the right person to talk about this particular topic, and I've said no because I don't believe I am, versus saying no because I'm trying to escape doing it.
Yep.
And then the next scenario is that I also go through that, I'm objective, I'm thinking, yes, actually I've got a lot to offer here, so I am going to speak. But it both feels very different because I've stepped back and I've I've just been a lot more objective, and I've weighed it up, and I've thought about, you know, areas of expertise versus having this kind of visceral reaction.
Nice. It strikes me is that what you've also done is offered yourself a win-win, which is really great. It doesn't really matter what you do, you can feel good about this.
I think the no in the context of I'm saying no because I don't feel like I have the expertise and knowledge versus I'm saying no because I just want to get out of it, like, feels a lot different.
Yeah. It looks the same, right?
Yeah.
No, but that's such a great thing to pay attention to. How does that feel in me? And because I know why I said no. Even if I tell a story, right, I know why I said no. Yeah. And the more choices we make based on our values, based on what feels kind of good to us, I sometimes would say it feels clean, right? There isn't a sort of like residual story that might be there. If it feels clean, then it's like you can walk away from the stuff you say no to. And you're just leaving it behind, and it's a sort of lovingly detached response.
Yeah. Oh, I like that, lovingly detached. Yeah. Thanks, Seth.
Nice work. I love a win-win. Yeah, cool. So notice that, like, you might think, oh, actually, I've got some choices here about what my outcomes would be, and actually, it doesn't really matter what I choose. So I might, you know, for some of you, you might be like, I always say yes, so I'm going to say no and see what that feels like. Or, oh, I never say yes, so let me just give it a crack, see what happens, because I honestly can't lose, right? So just notice, like, when you give yourself that kind of win-win, you are opening yourself up to experiment, and there's lots of different ways you could take it. So the last question here, or one of the second to last question, is what is the more helpful belief? And the thing to notice here, it's equally true as the current slightly unhelpful belief or protective belief, but it's just a more helpful way to interpret the context. Right, and it must be something that you believe already. And you'll know you believe it because there's no resistance to it. Notice if you have a little bit of a freeze. Can't think of a more helpful belief. That's very, very common. Especially if it's something that you've been playing with for a long time. Well, that just feels like, as Mary was saying earlier, it just feels a bit loaded. So just stick your hand up if you want some help to find a more helpful belief. I'm very lovingly detached to your circumstances, so I can help. Mary, how are you doing over there? I see you pondering.
So what I wrote was Samuel is doing the best he can.
Right. Do you believe that?
I do believe that. Yep. I do really do believe that.
Yep.
I just would always fill it in with, and it's not enough because I'm a bad mother. So I just put the full stop.
Yeah.
Samuel's doing the best he can, full stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Nice and neutral.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I would always try and do, particularly for beliefs that are like your one, which is a great example, where it doesn't really matter what we think or feel or do, it's happening to someone else, right, is hold them. It, like, picture them in the best outcome. Because then you're giving yourself something to do. this also works for things like really complicated world events that you cannot personally impact. Hold everyone involved in the most peaceful, loving outcome. You are doing something. You're actually doing more than you probably think you are. There's some good research around that as well. But I think it's just when it's happening to someone else, when you can give yourself something to do, then it doesn't, you don't feel as kind of, you know, helpless maybe, or like, oh, there's nothing I can do. And so I'm finding things that I can kind of sort of inject myself into maybe. Yeah. Does that help you, Mary? Yeah. Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad. Hey, Sharon, how you doing?
Yeah, that kind of really struck me. Again, you know, this must be something you believe is true, because I, you know, I can go through all this and I keep going through it about people make their own choices. And, you know, this person even said to me, oh, it's me, I've really changed. But then she also said, oh, I think something's changed about membership as well. And when she said that, so and I can go all this and I've written it all down and been neutral and all the rest of it. But there's still a little tiny part of me that thinks, must be something I've done. I don't know. It's just there. It's really hard to shift.
Yeah.
I don't really believe it. I can write it on paper and I can even say it in my head and even sometimes take action. But there's like a tiny little part that's still there.
Yeah.
It keeps popping up.
What I would offer is that that can sometimes suggest that the more helpful belief isn't actually that helpful, that it's actually supporting the more protective belief.
Mm.
And sometimes that can happen when our more helpful belief is about other people, right? So when you say people can make their own choices, but actually those choices are not the choices you want them to make. So you don't really believe that. And that's okay, right? But a suggestion, if you would like one, could be something like, I'm committing to this, to running this membership.
Yeah. So that's a really good point about having a belief that's kind of reliant on other people. Yeah, I hadn't realised that before. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic example that's going to help so many folks who are watching this. So I'm so glad you shared it. But yeah, it's like when you come back to, oh, what am I going to do, right? What am I believing? I believe I'm running this membership.
Mm-hmm.
That's easy to believe because it's true.
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't require anyone else to do anything different. Yeah. And it is neutral. You can always, you know, try that on for a few weeks and then go, I want to raise it, like I'm committing to improving this membership, right? Or I'm gonna see what I can do to make this better, right? You don't have to hold on to or keep any belief that no longer fits you, but see it as a ladder or as a, you know, a bit of a journey. You want to be in relationship with the thing.
Yeah, thank you.
You're very, very welcome.
It's really helpful, thank you.
You're so welcome. Andrea, I love this new belief. I'm liked, I'm valued, and I crossed out I'm smart because it's hard to believe that last one. So this is a really sophisticated protective belief, is just a thing to notice, right? Because you're actually requiring other people to like and value you, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That it's the whole being liked thing. It's, yeah, that's massive for me.
Right. So it's one of these ways that we can sneakily kind of add in a protective belief to a more helpful one. And then it sort of feels a bit crunchy because it's like, oh, it's quite hard to hang on to. It's not something you really want to throw yourself at. So I'm curious about what's the context here that we're playing with?
Well, in this particular one, I thought I'd chose an easy one. Yeah, it wasn't easy. Yeah, meeting new people and networking in the career world.
Right. So in the career world, and so this is based on your experience at this.
The networking event and hiding, but it's more like, you know, you initially I want to be liked and valued and thought of as smart, but yeah, that's not playing out in my head.
Well, and just notice, right, because then in order for that to be true, you have to do stuff to get other people to respond in a way that you want.
Yeah.
Right? How do you want to feel about networking? What was your desired emotion?
Where's it going? Confident and articulate, and then I put liked again. So
okay. Cool.
Yeah, so
confident and articulate, does that feel like really accessible for you? Is that something that you're like, yeah, I want to feel like that, because I feel like that all the time?
Yeah, in certain situations, right. Where I know the world and that situation, I can be confident.
Right.
And
how do you know you're being confident? What comes up? What do you do differently?
I can string a sentence together.
Yeah. And so at networking events, it's like meeting new people, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe people you know.
Yeah.
You like doing that?
No, not really. I just know it's a bit of a necessity. Do I like it? Maybe not. Yeah, I don't know.
So it's just a thing to notice, right? Because my sense is you actually want to do something. You're trying to make yourself do something you don't really want to do. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Right? But that means it's going to be hard to find a helpful belief that you really believe.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So here's a suggestion for you. Is if it's about like networking, what you could do is think about what would it help you to believe to make that more fun?
Right. Okay. You might have to leave all that one with me, but yes. Yeah.
So it could be. And this may work as a bit of an experiment, right? Like you could say, okay, I'm going to volunteer to go to a networking event once a month for the next 3 months or something like that. And then at that event, I'm going to meet 3 people and then I get to go.
Yeah. Have
3 conversations with people, hand out my card or, you know, whatever the kids are doing these days, right? however you feel, I have networked, right? And then it's like, I'll just do that 3 times and then I'm out.
Yeah, then I can run. Yeah.
So the idea is then, it's like, oh, okay, I don't really love this, but I'm going to see if I can do it as a way to, it's a bit of a challenge. Yeah. And so then the more helpful belief is, how can I make this fun? Like, sometimes, like for me, I'm like, if I have to go to a social event that I don't want to go to, I am totally wearing something that I feel really good in.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always got an exit strategy. So it's like, okay, I'm going to talk to 3 people and then I'm out. Perfect. Because then you're like, oh, I've got the satisfaction of having done it.
I've told myself
that I can. And then I'll see how I feel after that. And the thing is then you don't really care if they like you, if they value you, if they think you're smart, right? That's actually, you know, cherry on top stuff. It's more, did I get to know this person? Did I practice asking some questions that were a bit interesting, you know?
Yeah, interesting. Right. Let me process all of that.
Yeah.
So sophisticated though, isn't it? It's
sneaky. Yeah, it is. But I think your kind of crunchiness around it. Like, I'm not sure. It was like, oh, there's something in here that doesn't feel quite right to you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's because I'm trying to get myself to do something I don't really like.
Oh, thanks, Sarah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Does that help you, Andrea, just to play with that a little bit?
Yeah, I think I do need to play with it and pick it apart a bit and spend time on it, and it might keep coming up, but yeah, it's a start, isn't it?
It's the perfect start. And the thing is, right, the more you do this process, the more you'll start to see, oh, have I got a kind of more core belief about needing to be liked? What the heck's that about?
Mm.
Right, and then you could maybe explore that a bit deeper with some of the other tools, right? But I think this is a great first one, and I would just keep on playing with it.
Yeah, and I'm up for that. That's all good. Thank you.
Yeah, amazing. Bravo. Thanks for sharing. Sarah, I just want to come back to you and make sure you've got a new belief that feels okay and a helpful belief. Or are you still feeling like it's a bit, it's one of those ones where it's rational, but you're not quite sure you believe it? If you want to unmute or...
I think it is. I think it is high. I think it is about the kind of rational, intellectual me knows it.
Yeah.
But... you know, it's the old epistemology and ontology.
Yeah.
I know it to be true, but I don't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got a very sophisticated protector. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things you're playing with for your more helpful belief? Would you be comfortable sharing that?
Just find where I have put it. I think it's around when people react in a way that I see as rejecting. It's not actually about me. Right. It's probably what it kind of boils down to. When people don't behave how I perhaps need them to behave, it's probably about them and not about me.
But
rationally, I know that's true, you know. In the words of my grandmother, who'll be looking at you. That was her mantra when I was a child, which is kind of, you know, both a protective thing, but also quite horrible. You know, it's a combination of the two. Most people are obsessed about their own stuff. They're not really fixating on what you're doing. So, yeah, I think, yeah.
Well, and it sounds like for you, your experience is, no, I do feel rejected.
Yeah, no, that's definitely because it goes back to my, you know, my belief is, oh, this is because this is about me. This is something to do with me and what I'm doing wrong, you know.
So here's the thing, because I think, I just want to really commend your courage in looking at this core belief rather than playing with this. You've gone straight to the heart of things. So that's really brave to do that. And what I would offer, Sarah, is when it comes to this kind of thing, you want your helpful belief to be about what you can do in that circumstance, right? So it may be that a more helpful belief for you to just play with is, I won't reject me.
Okay. Thank you.
How that lands for you.
Yeah. No, I think that is an interesting perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I won't reject me. And so if that's the more helpful belief, it's like, no matter what anyone else says or I interpret what they're saying or doing, I'm not going to reject me.
Yeah.
Right. So it may be a really lovely opportunity to talk to your little child self that first came up with that, right? Like, instead of, and as someone who has a grandmother from Durham and may actually have been to the same school of etiquette as your grandmother. You know, what actually did you need to hear?
Yeah.
And can you offer that to yourself in those moments?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
It could be something just to play with, right? Just see how differently that feels to you. Yeah. I think Sarah and Andrea and Sharon as well, you've all kind of raised this really sticky thing, right? When our more helpful beliefs are actually kind of masking a desire for someone else to change their behavior so that we can feel okay. And actually what we want to do is feel okay regardless, take care of ourselves regardless of what other people choose to do. Yeah. So the last step of this whole thing, because I know everyone's like, oh man, can we be over now? The last step is, what is the first doable step, right? To practice your new helpful belief, what's a really simple action you could take today? Right? So it might be that, Andrew, if you want to take on the challenge of looking at, you know, how you can feel okay in networking events, you're like, oh, the first doable step, I'm going to research some networking events that are coming up. I'm going to try this out, this process out at the next couple of networking events I can find. Right? But the doable step is the research. Yeah. And Esther, you might, I'm just suggesting stuff here, which you can absolutely take or leave, and please know I'm not attached to any of it, but I'm thinking, oh, maybe you could come up with topics to speak about, right? Mary, you could just spend 5 minutes imagining Sam in a job that he loves. Whenever he comes and talks to you about it, you're like, you know what, Sam, here's what I'm imagining for you, a job where you feel really well taken care of and valued and you're really happy. I'm just going to keep visioning that for you. How nice for him to know his mum is imagining that for him, right? Yeah. So the idea is, right, you're just doing what's doable, and you'll know that if it's too big, if your doable step is actually a bit bigger, because you'll feel some resistance to it and you'll be like, oh, I don't think I want to do that, right? And so it's like, oh, what else can I do? What's a doable step? And all you're doing is just practicing. Have this new, more helpful belief kind of on your mind over the next couple of weeks. And just see, look for opportunities to practice it. See if it morphs or changes into something new. And I would just say, like, just the process of just seeing what comes up as you, you know, check in with yourself around what you're thinking, feeling, doing, not doing, letting this be very imperfect and just seeing what comes up for you. What it's going to do is give you some insight into the way that your self-doubt is operating. And when you can kind of take care of it as your healthy adult self, you're like, oh, I see where you're going here. Okay, here's what we're going to do differently. And you take care of yourself. It's like your self-doubt will start to quieten down, that protective part of you that's trying to keep you safe from whatever the risk is. It will have less to do because it starts to trust that there's another part of you that is actually in charge. There's another part of you that can take this on. And all of these parts of us that are worried and need protecting and, you know, worried for us, trying to hold us back, you know, they are our younger selves. Not quite sure, maybe you might have quite a good idea of what age they are, right? Okay, Andrea, thanks for coming. We're just winding up, so you're all good. So yeah, just play with this stuff. I would be really interested to see where you get to with it. Please know that this whole toolkit is part of module 4 in the in self-belief school. So if this stuff is exciting to you, like really playing with where your beliefs come from, what is operating for you now, have a little look at module 4. Start a bit of a practice of playing with your beliefs. You could spend a couple of months just doing that, and it will make a huge difference to your relationship with yourself now. Right? So don't feel like you're in any rush to like get through everything. Yeah. And on module 4, as on all of the modules, there is a discussion board, and you can jump on there and say, hey, help me find a more helpful belief, I'm stuck. And I'll be in there every day having a little look at what everybody's writing. So yeah. Any questions, comments, shares, things that need to be said before we close? All good? Enjoy this?
Yeah, just thank you. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you, thank you. I'll start practicing this new stuff tomorrow. Written load.
Love it, Sharon. So cool. So cool. And thank you, you know, so
thank you.
You're so welcome. So welcome. I'm glad it was helpful. And you know what I would say, Mary and Sharon have come to most of the calls. And I think that's the trick, is like the engagement and the just sort of staying with yourself. That's the thing that will really make a difference. So, yeah. Bless you. All right, my loves. Have a good night's sleep wherever you are. Have a lovely day, Mary, where you are. And I'll see you again soon. Yeah. All right, loves. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.